Everyone, and welcome to minute 79 of season 4 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we take a hilarious and poignant journey through the 1989 Billy Crystal Meg Ryan rom-com When Harry Met Sally, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Sean German of the Next Scene Podcast. Welcome back to the show, Sean.
Hey, thanks for having me back. Glad to be here. I hope I'm dressed appropriately for the occasion.
Well, I hope so. Did you rent the tux, or did you just wear your own?
This is a rental. Yeah, this is a rental.
Okay, all right. It's a good move because you know it is just a few hours. We've already discussed it. You know, you don't need to spend much money. You know, on something that you're just gonna wear just for a few hours, in our case for about 30 seconds.
Well, all week. I've been in it all week, so I'm gonna get my money. I'm getting my money's worth out of this rental, but it's gonna be due back Friday, so we will need to wrap things up on that. But I'm good.
I don't know. I think you might need it next week also. Not
okay.
Sure.
All right.
Oh, actually, you know what? Maybe you might have to leave early. I don't know.
I did get the tux insurance though. The tux insurance. So
good. So be careful. So if you spill any wine on it, you should be fine. Mm-hmm. That works.
Okay. So I will just jump in on that. I just remembered I was invited to a wedding. It was a cousin of my wife who lived in sort of the Virginia, Washington, D.C. area, Northern Virginia. And the wedding reception was at an embassy. And I forget what country it was, but like one of the countries has an embassy and you could rent a room in the physical embassy building for your wedding reception. And they couldn't serve red wine, and it was because they had, or what I heard, was that the carpets or the rugs in that room were so valuable that they couldn't risk anything that would stain it. So apparently, like white wine, if you spilled it, or you know, if you had a martini or something like that that spilled, they could clean that, but red wine would stain. So there was no red wine at this wedding reception because they were worried about stains in the rugs. So so I don't know. That's a thing. That's a story.
That's actually a really cool idea. I mean, I'm assuming it wasn't that cheap renting it though.
I'm guessing not. I'm guessing it was not. I was not involved in the planning and thankfully not in the paying. So I don't know, but I'm guessing. But because we were talking earlier about like wedding dress insurance and worrying about red wine or so forth if it's if it's a rental gown versus something you bought. So, this was not, not because of the wedding gown, but again, because of the rugs in the reception venue. So these things come into factor, what you can serve, what might cause a stain, what might spill, and, what it might spill on, whether it be a wedding dress or, the rug and so forth. So, it's very complicated planning a wedding. There's a lot of things to consider there, apparently.
Yeah, which is why most people prefer to just do it once and that's it.
That's why that's the best move. Do it once, get it over with, and then you never have to worry about that again, which hopefully will be the case here.
That's great. Minute 79 begins with Marie and her father finishing walking down the aisle and ends with Sally having a conversation. Mm-hmm. So things start off with we ended things yesterday with Marie and her, assumingly her father, walking down the aisle. He brings her to the end of the aisle. You know, Sally has moved off to the side. Jess moves closer. And, her father gives her a kiss. And then Jess takes her arm and they start, walking towards the priest. And the first thing he does is he lifts up her veil. Mm-hmm. Okay. So do you know anything about the various religious customs as to why, first of all, why there is a veil and why they lift it up? Do you have any idea about that?
I don't know for sure. My guess would be this would have something with if this was sort of an arranged marriage or a situation where the bride and the groom have not met prior to the wedding. And so at this point, this is like, this is the big reveal. This would be the first time that the groom is seeing the bride with, the lifting of this veil.
Okay.
Either that or maybe in the old days, the tradition was you didn't know, where you just like, okay, you know, you're going to be marrying someone, you know, from the groom side, and you know, it'll be a surprise, you know, who shows up, you know, who, you know, it's like, you know, like let's make a deal where they, you know, they draw the curtain or they open the door and you see what's behind it.
Do you want what's behind cut number one, or do you want
cut number one, or
curtain, or do you want what's in the box?
Yeah. So yeah, no, but I don't know about the history of this veil thing, but I have a feeling a podcast host is about to tell me.
Well, first of all, has your Bible study? Do you know anything about stories in the Bible that were dealing with weddings and possibly veils and things like that? Do you remember from your Sunday school days?
No, or? I'm trying to think. Like I know there are married people in the Bible.
Very good, John. Yes, there are married people in the Bible.
But I don't remember any stories about any particular wedding. So I got okay. Well,
in the Bible, there's the story. There's the story about Jacob, okay, mm-hmm. who married two sisters, Rachel and Leah. No, Rebecca was his mother.
Close.
Rebecca was his mother.
So maybe it was close.
Well, that goes back to the incest comment from the other day. No, we're staying away from that.
Rachel and Leah, of course. Yeah, Jacob. We all
know. Exactly. So he worked for his future father-in-law, Laban, for 7 years in order to be able to marry Rachel. And then at the wedding, you know, he found out the day after the wedding that it was actually Leah that he married. You know, he was tricked by Laban to marry the other sister, because she was the older sister and he wanted her to get married first, you know? So, right. So from that point on, it was instituted that you actually, you know, look at the bride beforehand to make sure that you got the right one for obvious reasons. I mean, again, there's a lot of different stories about what really happened, you know, that Rachel apparently did know, that they were doing this, and she and Jacob was scared that Laban would do something like this, and that the two of them set up a signal so that he would know that it is her, and she didn't want to embarrass her sister, so she gave her sister the sign also, mm-hmm. so that you know, she knew that this is what was going to happen. She knew that her sister would eventually you know, marry Jacob. So. Yeah, so I mean, I can only tell from the you know, the biblical stories that I know. I mean, I know that there probably are other religions that have veils and will explain, you know, that have different reasons of why they do it. I mean, a lot of it has to do with modesty before God.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, and if the veil is white, it's the idea of chastity and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
They are now something that they became something that was much more used, you know, it became much more popular,
right?
You know, to do that, you know, over the course of the years. So yeah, that's why they have the veil, and then the priest starts to you know, first of all, we have Sally and Harry, you know, flanking them, as, you know, Jess and Marie are standing in front of the priest. And the priest has a very long, I guess, spiel that he's saying, you know, mm-hmm. you know, it's the typical one that we know from most movie and TV weddings. You know, we're all gathered here today to celebrate the marriage of Marie and Jess and to consecrate their vows of matrimony, the vows they will take to join their lives. The wine they will share binds all their hopes together. And by the rings they will wear, they will be known to all as husband and wife.
And wife.
And that's it. You know, yeah. Marriage.
Love. True love.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, Rob Reiner likes to have weddings in his movies, I guess.
He does seem to have a thing for it. And Marie is wearing that dress that we saw the previous minute, which, again, not mm-hmm. a big fan of those particular, you know, that style of sleeve. But I like the dress. I like her simple jewelry. She's wearing a, you know, a pendant that's just a simple, you know, diamond or some sort of clear stone, you know, very simple. Yeah, I think a very beautiful bride and, you know, a lovely ceremony.
Yeah. So what I found completely shocking when I did a search on IMDb there is no credit for who the actor who plays Marie's father, which, okay, he doesn't have any lines. I can sort of understand that. But the priest is not listed there either.
Oh, my.
Yes. I could not find anything about that. The only the only thing that comes close is a man telling a joke at the wedding. I don't know if that's considered the priest, you know, with the way that I don't know if you really consider this a joke, but yeah.
Yeah.
It's very interesting that they do that. And what I love about the conversation here, the speech that the priest gives, you know, the camera is focusing on Harry and Sally. It's not focusing on Jess and Marie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most times when you're watching a movie and there's a wedding going on, the movie is focusing on the bride and groom.
Right.
And here it's looking at Sally and Harry's reactions to everything that's going on. You know, and the two of them keep looking at one another, you know, because they're both very uncomfortable and they don't know how they're supposed to be acting towards one another here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's great to see that.
Yeah, I noticed the blocking, the way they're set up. So at least for part of the minute. So we're, you know, we're behind the officiant, the judge, the justice of the peace, or the rabbi, whoever's performing the ceremony. We're seeing them from behind. And then we see that person is flanked on either side by Harry and Sally. And then behind them is Jess and Marie, which is odd. So from, you know, kind of the perspective of the audience, the people that are attending this wedding, I don't know if that's really considered an audience, but anyway, from the people at the wedding, like Harry and Sally are in front of, you know, are closer to the, you know, the person doing the wedding. They're kind of more upstage than, or, you know, further than the people that are actually getting married, which is something I don't think you would ever see at an actual wedding. You know, it kind of works for,
you might see an actual wedding, but the cameraman wouldn't be focusing on it.
Well, yeah, you wouldn't have the cameraman there. It is kind of odd. Like, they're not, usually it's the couple that are getting married that are sort of closest to the person who's performing the ceremony, and then there are attendants, you know, the kind of the wedding party are further back. But you can see they're actually closer to the person doing the wedding than the couple. But that's the film. It's not when Jess married Marie, it's when Harry met Sally. So
correct.
But it also,
right. If it was when Jess met Marie, we would have just a very short little, you know, conversation about, you know, right before they go to the, yeah, to the restaurant, and then have dinner, the four of them, and then they get married, and that's it, you know.
So we see them, the camera focuses on that. Certainly they have an unobstructed view as they can look, you know, past the main characters in the wedding, are not, you know, the main characters of the film can kind of see each other and look past the main characters of the wedding, so to speak.
Right. Exactly. They do a very nice job of that. And I it still baffles me that the priest is not listed in IMDb.
Yeah. It's so weird, because I can see, you know, at this point, in sort of filmmaking history, it's not that uncommon that minor actors or actors playing smaller parts wouldn't be credited. But that
in the 80s, in the 80s, by that point, they were crediting. It was, you know, if you look at movies back in the 30s and 40s and maybe even the 50s, actually even the 60s, too, there are a lot of non-credited.
Right. When you do get things like, you know, there's various, you know, waiters and, other minor characters that do get, credit in the film. Maybe it just comes down to, who's got the better agent. If you're a joke teller at wedding, you know, that guy had a better agent or a better manager than Marie's father.
Apparently. Yeah. But again, Marie's father doesn't have any speaking lines. So, you know, he wouldn't get like SAG credit or anything like that for this.
Right, versus someone telling a joke. But also, but a little surprised, like for IMDb, usually even someone who isn't credited, you know, credited,
usually they add them themselves.
They will, you know, you'll find out you've got, you know, there's a long list of uncredited roles, which is, it's funny. You actually got, looking at the IMDb and which characters are kind of listed uncredited, we actually have like Ingrid Bergman and Claude Rains listed as uncredited actors from the scene where they're watching Casablanca in the film. Yes. Mm-hmm. So you haven't, you know, which obviously, you know, well, not, maybe not obviously, like, so they're not listed, you know, at the end of the film in the credits, but they're listed in IMDb as uncredited actors. And they just, they occur in a film that the characters are watching. They're not directly in this film themselves.
Right. Like, for instance, they have someone uncredited as a school professor. Like, mm-hmm. where have we seen a professor?
Yeah. Yeah. So another thought I had in terms of, you know, talking about, you know, a very minor role, you know, we just see, you know, someone walking Marie down the aisle and, you know, does, and then lifts the veil but doesn't have any parts. Sometimes they'll grab someone. You know, this could have been, you know, like, you know, an assistant producer or assistant director.
Correct.
You know, mm-hmm. you know, just someone who was on set and be like, hey, do you have a black suit? Great, put it on. You're, you know, you're going to be the father of the bride for this scene, for this, you know, quick walk down the aisle. Like, and I don't know that happened in this case, but certainly that does happen sometimes, where they just kind of pull someone on set and be like, all right, stand here, don't say anything, ready, action.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And then the scene changes, and we're now at the wedding reception, and we hear music yeah. playing, and we see like a 6-man band,
mm-hmm.
and they do a great shot here of panning the room for us mm-hmm. to see, you know, the various guests and everyone who's there. We see a photographer standing close to Jess and Marie taking pictures of them, you know, which in today's society things would be a little different because of digital technology. Mm-hmm. You know, when people yeah. are at weddings taking pictures, you know, they have the ability, you know, to I guess waste film.
mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. even though obviously they're not using film, but to waste the different opportunities of film.
Yeah.
In order
yeah.
to get as many pictures as possible. You know. Mm-hmm. And then we can actually see at some point Harry standing and talking to two men. Mm-hmm. You know, which maybe one of those is the joke teller at the wedding. I don't know.
yeah.
You know,
yeah. But I like, yes, it kind of sets the scene. And, yes. Well, I do like, and I sorry to butt in, but I just want to say, I love live music. I like seeing a band versus just, you know, a DJ playing pre-recorded music. So, you know, I like that they, you know, live music and, you know, live musicians playing. So that's always nice. And yeah, this nice little pan across from the band, the crowd, we see the, you know, the happy couple sharing a dance on the dance floor. And then, yeah, then across to Harry, who is, yes, he's standing with two other gentlemen, but he is his attention is somewhere
right.
else. He's looking off in the
distance. That's right. He's looking at them and then looking off into the distance. You know, and as that's happening, we hear the voiceover, or not even a voiceover, but we hear the sounds of Sally talking, and she says, "I've never seen her so happy. She's a totally different person." Oh, yes, she is. And then we hear someone else say, "It's great."
Yeah.
And so it's I actually think it's great the way that they do this is that, you know, we have the camera panning and it's focusing on Harry. And then we hear Sally talking and it basically shows us the anchor that basically he's paying attention to Sally here. You know, even though he mm-hmm. can't really hear what she's saying, but he's paying attention right. to what Sally is doing and how Sally is,
yeah,
you know. Yeah. So I like the way
right. and, you know it. Yeah, in this crowd, in this reception with all these people, like he's aware of where she is, even if he's not yet. Even, you know, he's not talking to her, he can't hear what she's saying, but he is certainly aware of where she is and kind of keeping track of her movements through the reception. Yeah.
Yeah. So that really works very, very well. The way they do that. So one of the things that they mention in the commentary is they keep talking about the fact that the day that they were filming the scene, they would always be going to some restaurant nearby, and they would constantly be bumping into John Gotti and Sonny the Bull in this restaurant. So it's great that Billy Crystal, you know, mentions that. I don't know who Sonny the Bull is or was. I know who John Gotti was, you know, but you know, to mention the fact that's what, you know, watching this scene reminds him of Gotti is just great.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, I guess you're from context, you could have figured, you know, Sammy the Bull, I think Gravano was his last. Sammy the Bull, Gravano was, I guess, you know, an associate of John Gotti, was sort of someone in that line of work, as they say. So,
right. Okay, that works. Do you have anything else you want to say about the this minute before we get into the script?
Yeah, just real quick. I like the last thing we see before we cut from the ceremony to the reception, the last shot, I think it's the very last shot of the ceremony is on Harry. And it's, he just looks very uncomfortable. Like you were saying before, like he just, you know, he's not sure what to do, which he should be fine. It kind of goes back to where we started at the beginning of the week when he says, you know, isn't it nice that we're comfortable, the scene in the restaurant where he's like, you know, isn't this nice? We're comfortable. We can just sit and eat. We don't have to talk. Well, here is a situation where they like absolutely are not expected to talk. Like they should not talk at all. Like it's, you know, their part is to stand there and be silent and, you know, just kind of be witness to the wedding. Like it's, you know, they don't have a speaking part, but yet Harry seems very uncomfortable standing there silently. And I think Billy Crystal does a good job of communicating that. Just kind of the look on his face, the way he looks at Sally and the way he stands there kind of communicates the discomfort that he has. So, I thought that was, you know, kind of good communicating where he is, you know, in this moment.
Correct. And that works.
That's kind of all I have.
Okay. No, and it works that way. It works the way that they do that because it's what do they say? It's telling us by showing or it's.
Right. Yeah. Showing.
Right. It's showing that it's telling us by showing. That's what it comes down to. You know, we can feel the uncomfortableness of Harry, who, you know, tomorrow we'll get into the conversation and that completely negates it. But that's a separate issue. You know, we'll talk about that tomorrow.
Right.
Well, you know, a reason to keep people to come back tomorrow to listen to us explain that reason. So the script for this entire minute is actually three lines. That's it. There is absolutely no speech from the priest. It's just descriptive. And we don't even have Sally doing her conversation either. It just says, Harry looks at Sally as she comes down the aisle. Sally looks at him for a moment, looks away. And then it switches and it goes interior, wedding reception, entrance and kitchen, afternoon. A band is playing. That's it.
That's it.
That's all there is. So tomorrow we'll continue with that part. So every Thursday, we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, Dating Courting Edition, where my guest will give some sort of story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure, something that happened to them over the course of their life that has something to do with dating or courting. So, Sean, you have another story for us?
I have another series of words that I'm going to say.
A series of words.
Whether this arises to, you know, to form a story or a narrative, I'll leave that to the listener to decide. But I guess a little bit of a defense of something that my wife and I do as a couple that apparently is not notorious, but I guess questionable. I guess, you know, some people question it. And I didn't realize that when we started doing this, that this was maybe something we shouldn't be doing, some things that some people disagree with. But so we play the game with the middle seat on an airplane. So when we are flying somewhere, if it's a layout in the airplane where there's three seats in a row and we're picking seats, we will try to find a row. If there's three empty seats across, so we will pick the seats, we'll pick the aisle seat and the window seat and leave the empty seat in between us. And the goal, of course, being that subsequent people who buy tickets for this flight and then pick their seats, they're not going to want the middle seat. So if there are any empty seats left on the flight, there's a good chance that, you know, that empty seat will be one of the middle seats. And then maybe we'll be lucky enough and we'll have the middle seat between us. And then, we essentially each get a seat and a half. You know, we have the whole row of three seats, to share between the two of us. And then, if someone comes along, if someone does have that middle seat, then usually we'll offer to switch. And my wife prefers the window. So then I'll offer to move. I will give that person an option. I'll say, well, hey, you have the middle, which you prefer to sit on the aisle, and I'll take the middle seat. And usually they do, because most people don't like to be in, you know, the middle of three seats in between two strangers.
In the middle of two people who are not strangers.
Well, yeah. Well, no, I mean,
strangers. Yes, no, I know.
We're not strangers to each other. Yeah. Right. People who are not strangers to each other. And apparently, like, this is, you know, I've read a few things online recently that, this is not to be done. Like, some people consider this rude to, expect someone else to move their seat or to, you know, kind of play games with the seating arrangement that, you know, some people will say, well, you know, if you're traveling together and you want to sit together, you should just go ahead and pick seats together. So I was kind of surprised because I don't think we've ever had an issue. I don't think any, and usually these days, you know, most flights are full. Airlines have kind of cut back on the number of flights that they book. And I think the purpose, you know, that they want to ensure, you know, an empty seat on a flight is money lost. So, you know, they'd rather have fewer flights, but have them all full than rather have, you know, an empty flight or a flight that's got lots of empty seats taking off. Right. So, so this usually doesn't work. And certainly more recently, it has worked less often. There have been times, though, you know, it's worked out very well. But when it doesn't work, I think every time we've offered, you know, that person a chance to switch seats, they have taken it. They said, oh, yes, I'd rather be on the aisle than be in the middle. And then we just switch and that's fine. But you know what? I think it's sort of the expectation is we know going in, we are taking a chance so that if, you know, if we happen to book seats that are not next to each other, and the person in the middle says, you know what, I like the middle and I don't want to move, then, you know, we're not going to fight about it. I'm not going to make a big deal. I know I'm taking a chance going in. And if the person decides that they don't want to switch, then we end up not sitting together. But we recognize that, you know, when we try to kind of play this game that we're taking the chance. So, I don't really understand the controversy over the practice, but I know that there's some people that kind of don't think it's something we should do, but I'm coming out and saying, you know, this is something we do. And I think we're going to continue to do it. I haven't been convinced otherwise. And, you know, if other people don't like it, I guess, I guess it sucks to be them. I don't know what to tell you. You know, if you don't want to do it, don't do it. But we're going to do it. And again, I think it's okay as long as you go in understanding the risk. Again, you know, if someone wants to take that middle seat and they don't want to switch, then, you know, I guess the risk or the game, you know, we lose the game, you know, the risk didn't pay off for us. But, you know, I think every time we'd either gotten that empty middle seat, which gives us a little extra room, or the person who has agreed to switch. So we do end up seating together. So it seems like, you know, win-win either way. But, so that's just again, I don't know if that counts as a story, but that's, you know, a little game, a little thing we do when, you know, usually it's flying, but I guess it could apply to other situations where you're forced to pick seats. So I don't think we haven't done it in like, I know these days, we, you know, you have to pick seats around us, the theaters, movie theaters, going to a movie, you have to pick.
Do you also have empty seats between the two of you there?
We haven't tried it in a movie theater. I don't know if we'd want to risk it there. Yeah, movie theaters, we always pick seats together. But I don't know. You think an airplane, you know, if we're flying, usually most flights, it's probably going to be longer than a movie. Although the way movies go these days, sometimes they're pushing 3 hours. But yeah, usually if we're flying, it's a flight. Usually when we're flying, the flight is longer than a movie. But for some reason, we feel comfortable risking it with a flight. But we've never done it in a movie theater. We always pick seats next to each other when we need to pick seats. You know, whether it's a movie or a theater for a play or some other performance. You know, in a theater where we need to pick seats. In most cases, we always pick seats together. But for a flight, for airline, for seats on a plane, we take the chance. We play that game, and I guess just knock on wood. So far, it's always worked out for us.
Great. I actually thought you were going to, when you were talking about the fact that you guys wanted seats on opposite sides, you know, of the aisle and the window, I thought the idea was so that you can, you know, hold hands over the person who's sitting there in between you. You know, that's what I thought we were going at the beginning. So, yeah. Okay.
But, well, I think that's one of the complaints that some of the things, I think that's one of the complaints that people have, is that they've, you know, people who have ended up in a middle seat between two people that know each other or two people that are a couple, and then they end up holding hands or passing things back and forth or having a conversation kind of over or around this person that's stuck in the middle. But we generally will have some conversation. We may talk somewhat, but for the most part, once we get on a plane, it's the headphones go on, and you know, she's listening to music, I'm listening to a podcast, and we're both just trying to sleep and making the time pass as quickly as possible until we reach our destination. Another one of us is a big fan of flying. You know, we'll do it if it's necessary to get to a destination, but you know, the flying experience itself, you know, we don't enjoy. So generally we've just got headphones on. We're just going to be enjoying our entertainment until we reach our destination. So we're not going to be trying to hold a conversation over the poor person that gets stuck between us. So maybe that makes it a little less controversial there. But,
Quite possible. All right, possible. That's great. That is great. Thank you very much for that, Sean.
I don't know, Sean, if it's great, but it's...
It is. Of course it is.
Yeah.
Or at least I think it is. How's that?
Okay. All right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. So you want to once again tell people where they can find Sean German?
So once again, I did another thing. I covered a film 1 minute at a time, similar to what Movie Rob here is doing with When Harry Met Sally. But in that case, it was the film Groundhog Day, which I covered 1 minute at a time with a great co-host, Dave Pallas. And we called that Groundhog Minute because having two units of time after each other seemed weird. Groundhog Day Minute seemed like a strange name. So we just went with Groundhog Minute. And that is at groundhogminute.com and Groundhog Minute on social medias and so forth. So, if you like groundhogs, then check that out. Groundhog Minute.
If you like groundhogs, or if you like Phil Collins, Phil Collins also, but Phil Connors.
If you like Phil Collins, if you like Genesis or Peter Gabriel, even, or Bill Murray or Bill Murphy, as I would often call him for some reason during the podcast, you can check that out.
All right, great. And while you're doing that, you go rate, review, and subscribe to any podcast you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So, Sean, you feel like coming back tomorrow to finish off the week?
Absolutely. I mean, I get the tux is rented. It's not due back till Saturday. So I might as well stick around.
All right. So we'll see you at the wedding. But until then, I'll have what she's having.
I'll have what you thrill
with all your faults. I love you still. It had to be you. Wonderful you. Had to be you.